The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray, Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol here in the studio. A little later on, we'll be looking ahead to those big semi-finals coming up in the World Cup over the next 2 days. But we will start with the behind-the-scenes drama in the US national team camp.
Drama.
Continuing the conversation here, Greg Berhalter, speaking at a summit on moral leadership in New York last week, said, in this last World Cup, we had a player that was clearly not meeting expectations on and off the field. We were ready to book a plane ticket home. That's how extreme it was. And what it came down to was, we're going to have one more conversation with him, and part of the conversation was how we're going to behave from here out. There aren't going to be any more infractions. There's a little bit more here. As a coach, the way you can deal with things most appropriately is going back to your values, because it's difficult to send a player home. It was going to be a massive controversy. You would have been reading about it for 5 days straight. But we were prepared to do it because he wasn't meeting the standards of the group, and the group was prepared to do it as well. So there's been a lot of talk about this. Seb and Herc are now joining us from Qatar because we'd like to get the reaction that we've seen today on Instagram from Gio Reyna. Seb.
Probably worth noting that the person that confirmed, because Berhalter doesn't say who it was, is Tom Bogert of MLSsoccer.com, and then The Athletic with Paul Tenorio and Sam Stajkal. They have an article that really kind of lays out everything that happened. The first person to speak on Gio's behalf was his agent, Dan Siegel. But as you mentioned, Kay, about 4 hours ago, we did get an Instagram post from Gio Reyna himself. We've edited this for brevity, but here's kind of the core of it. Reyna says, just before the World Cup, Coach Berhalter told me that my role at the tournament would be very limited. I was devastated. I am someone who plays with pride and passion. Soccer is my life, and I believe in my abilities. I am also a very emotional person, and I fully acknowledge that I let my emotions get the best of me and affect my training and behavior for a few days after learning about my limited role. I apologize to my teammates and coach for this, and I was told I was forgiven. I am disappointed that there is continuing coverage of this matter, as well as some highly fictionalized versions of events, and extremely surprised that anyone on the U.S. men's team staff would contribute to it. Coach Berhalter has always said that issues that arise with the team will stay, quote, in-house, so we can focus on team unity and progress. I love my team, I love representing my country, and I am focusing now on only improving and growing as a soccer player and a person. I hope that going forward, each person involved in U.S. soccer focuses only on what is in the best interest of the men's national team so we can enjoy great success at the World Cup in 2026. All right, Herc. So whose side you on? Gio Reyna or Greg Berhalter?
Well, they're both in the wrong. That's a reality. You can't ignore that Gio Reyna was about to be sent home for his attitude, that it became so toxic within the group that he was confronted by multiple players. You can't ignore that. You can't act like a petulant child within a team setting and expect things to go your way. Expect to be plain. Now, he was confronted by Greg Berhalter. He was asked to issue an apology, which he stated, I will, because I am in the wrong. Apologized to the group and then stood there while certain members of that leadership council then told him his wrongs in front of the group, accepted it like a man, and was forgiven.
Yep.
You move on. He's 20 years old. If the way I acted when I was 20 years old is an indictment of who I am as a person today, I'd be in trouble.
Okay. So
you learn from it.
Where does this leave Berhalter with the group moving
there
forward?
There we go. Greg Berhalter, his responsibility to the group, the sanctuary that is the locker room. You can't go to a symposium, you can't go to a summit, talk to a group of people about leadership, and expect this to be off the record.
Even though
you can't be that naive,
he was told that it would be off
dumb.
The record.
No, no. You could have used a million examples of leadership in said summit. Your time in North Carolina, your time in the Columbus Crew, your time as a player in the Bundesliga, your time as a player of the U.S. men's national team, certain other elements of your coaching resume, even at this level, at the World Cup. But you don't use the one story, the one player that was on the tip of the tongue of everybody in the American media outlet. Everybody knew that something had happened. Everybody knew that something was going on. Even though he meant well, and I think he handled it well initially, because I feel he was trying to protect Gio Reyna when he said, yeah, he's a little tight. No, then it was tactical. It's on me. He's trying to protect Gio Reyna there.
Right.
So this doesn't get out. But he lets it go out in the worst possible manner here. And that's inexcusable.
So I've heard you wax poetic about this for like 35 minutes on Football Americas. You know, I'm always trying to get Craig Burley on our show. He's just always saying no, no, no. So
busy.
I want to get Craig's perspective on this, but also, like, do you think this is something unique to American soccer, or would this happen in other footballing nations? Because I love the drama. Finally, we have some drama after a World Cup. For us,
a player was almost sent home.
That's pretty good news.
Hey, have you got a memory problem? You didn't pay me enough. Being on it. Hurt wasn't there. Hurt knew what was coming on. He never showed up. But, hey, it's not quite Harry and Meghan, is it? I mean, it's not going to be a scandal for the royal family, is it? But, you know, it's a drama by US standards who, let's be honest, they love a drama over here because everything is dramatical. But a couple of things interested me. One of them was when Eric touched on it, you know, off the record is not off the record. You've got to be a bit cooter than that. Unless that is, Greg Berhalter was hoping it would leak out to say, well, this is maybe a little bit off my shoulders and why we didn't beat the Dutch, because I had some problems. And the other thing was, that I thought was notable, and I have no dog in this race in terms of who I believe or who I don't, is Gio Reyna saying, I was told before the World Cup started my time would be limited. Now, I know he's had his injuries, but I find it surprising a little bit that arguably your most talented player and certainly potentially your most effective player, along with Pulisic, has been told before the competition that his time's going to be limited. Now, would I be in the doldrums if I'd been told that? Yeah, I would be. I would be. I was told I was left out of the 97 FA Cup final. My face tripped me. All game, after the game, at the reception, the lot. So, yeah, I understand both sides of the coin, but I didn't really see the need to bring it up for Berhalter, unless, of course, he was quite happy for this to trickle out.
Yeah, Steve, you were on the coach's side yesterday, yep. Berhalter's side. When you see this from Gio Reyna, though, what Craig's talking about, that it was his point of view that he was told he'd be given limited minutes, right. Why would the coach say that to him?
Well, he clearly hasn't told them before they get on the plane. He's clearly told them either the day of or probably the day before the first game. That would be my assumption from reading that. Because it's even worse if he's told them a week before they get together and he's still walking around like a big baby. That's even worse. The fact is, he has told them before the Wales game. Now, that means that between the Wales game and the England game and then the last game, you've got how long? 10 days? You've got 10 days. There are 14 other players who are not going to get a lot of time. What's the team that starts going to do if the other 14, including Reyna, down tools because they're not getting time?
Yeah, but I mean, this is not
a small thing.
They haven't got
this
14 other players like Gio Reyna.
But it doesn't matter.
Every single
one of those players is as important as Gio Reyna.
They're not.
Of course, you go and tell one of those guys who travelled, who trained every day, who gave every single thing, who turned up, did what they were told, got behind everybody, was a good soldier, a good citizen. So they don't count?
Well, they do count, but you go and talk to James Maddison at England, who never got any game time. You go and talk to Ben White, who allegedly...
Part of the deal. Craig, is not to go and not train properly, and then when you're finished training, go around...
No, I understand that.
And it affects everybody.
But I go...
That's not acceptable at any level at all.
I agree. I totally agree. I can understand a certain amount of moping around when you probably think you're the best player on that rota, albeit with the injury problems. And he's telling you before the competition, your time's going to be limited. I'm saying, my time's limited? Who are you picking? Who are you picking? So I think there is an element of that. And yeah, I understand everybody's a squad. There's an importance level. But unfortunately, certain players need to be sort of mollycoddled more than others.
You've got to treat
Harry Kane, you've got to treat Lionel Messi, you've got to treat Ronaldo a bit different. All these players now, he's not at their standard. But in terms of the US, they don't have an embarrassment of super talented players. I'm not on anybody's side here, by the way.
I know, and I agree, right, that we all know there are certain players who will get treated a little bit differently because of their importance, right, basically on the field. But he's actually gone out his way to tell Reina. How many other players did he go out his way to actually tell them? I bet he didn't. So he's actually gone out his way to look after him.
He throws it back in his face. Play a big part in the World Cup. That means, okay, so even if I come on as a substitute, I can't even impress you. He might have taken it that way.
If he goes to half the squad players and tells them he's not playing, they'll be like, oh yeah, I knew that. He goes to Giorena and says, oh, by the way, your time's going to be limited. He's going, my time's limited.
I don't care. He's a professional footballer. He's not going to, because it doesn't go the way he wants, it's okay for him to go and sabotage the rest of the group. Because I'll tell you now, training is competitive and everybody wants to win. And if you've got a guy running around who couldn't care less, that causes problems. And it causes even more problems when you're sitting having your lunch after training and when you're having your dinner day after day, listening to somebody at the end of the table moaning and groaning about me, me, me. That, all that does is disrupt everybody.
Well,
so every single bit of criticism Reina's getting, he deserves every single bit of it. 100%.
Well, we don't know the full story. And that's even worse if it's over a season. But in 3 or 4 weeks at a camp, you've got to deal with that. Right? And I tell you what, if it is such the issue that Stevie's talking about, send him home. And don't give me the claptrap about we're talking about it for 5 days. It's not Lionel Messi. You know what I mean? It's not Ronaldo getting sent home. You know, he's a good player, he's a young guy, it would have made some headlines, it would have taken up a press conference or two, and then it's dealt with. Because guess what? There's games to play. If Giorena was such the massive problem, put him on a plane. I'm not saying he wasn't an issue, but it just seems to me that a guy has been moping around because he's been told he's not playing, and he's found that hard to accept as one of the most talented players in the squad. I think if I was in that scenario, I would be as well. It's not the same scenario, but Southgate sent Ben White home, we believe. Now, Ben White was just a squad player, right? Probably was never going to play. But we think, we understand, there was a big argument, allegedly, and Southgate went, no, home. If it was such a problem, Berhalter should have went, I'm not canvassing the group. I'm not canvassing the group. I'm the big guy here. I'm the head coach. If this is the problem that some people are saying it is, flight home. He didn't. He kept him there.
Sebi, whose side are you on? Craig's or Stevie's?
No, I will, at my own peril, disagree with Craig. I think, obviously, maybe on ESPN FC, it might not have been A-block material every night if he sends Gio Reyna home, but it would have led our show every night. It would have been a huge controversy within this. Just to add some context to what Stevie was saying, because he was wondering about like the timing of this. The inflection point, right, the inflection point for when Reyna, his attitude and performance are questioned, is the scrimmage against Algarafa, which takes place 2 days before the game against Wales. So we can assume that he got the news sometime before that, not in the day before the Wales game or even, you know, the 36, 48 hours. It would have been before the game against Algarafa. To that point, how would you have reacted, Herc?
You've got to take it better. And I think I stated that. The issue here, Giovanni Reyna acting like a petulant child, was handled. It was handled so that he was threatened. They threatened by sending him home. He had to plead for forgiveness in front of the group. That's no longer the issue here. And I agree with everything Stevie said. Gio Reyna deserves a lot of criticism. But Stevie, somewhere along that I'm a coach, I'm a manager hat that he's wearing, is forgetting about Greg Berhalter's own words. And Giovanni Reyna used him in that statement. We shall handle this business in-house. That wasn't handled in-house. He went to a conference about leadership, a summit, and literally spoke about the one thing that was the drama in-house.
Right.
About a kid who's 20 years old to a bunch of strangers. So you just betrayed that locker room.
So you don't think this team will forgive Greg Berhalter?
How can you? I don't know if it's, Stevie, if you feel comfortable enough as a coach of airing your dirty laundry that way with strangers.
Yeah, you don't do that.
About players,
no,
about your team.
No, absolutely agree with you. You don't, no. Unless Greg Berhalter has no intention of going back with the USA, then 100% you keep your trap shut. Whenever you finish, then it's a different ballgame. But if he still wants to be the USA manager, this will change the way the US Association will look at him, and it has to, because I do agree that if you're a player, now you're, well, hold on a second, you can't do that. You know, Greg Berhalter wouldn't expect any of his players to throw him or anybody else under the bus, so it goes two ways. So that would suggest to me that maybe Greg Berhalter has finished with the national team.
Let me go back to that point that Seb made about with a lead Football America's. We know what you're like, Seb. If Christian Pulisic had broken his toenail, you would have led that in Football America's. Let's be honest about it. Don't give me all that. But tell me, Herc, you played for the US. In what world?
Yes. Sure.
In what world do you tell? Right, we can argue about who the US's best player is, right? But I think it's a sort of Pulisic, Giorena when fit debate, right? At what point do you tell your arguably your best player before the tournament that A, he's not just not going to get game time against Wales and that'll be limited, but at what point do you tell him, oh, this tournament, your game time's going to be limited? Tell me how that helps the US.
Craig, you're absolutely 100% correct on this. And I said it on Football Americas. I stated it before on social media. You cannot take the hope, the dream away from a player, let alone one of your best players, a player who was so instrumental in World Cup qualifying, a player with the highest ceiling in this group.
So no case to be made for transparency.
You can't have that carrot being dangled and then taken from you. You can't have the rug being pulled from you like that. He's, at the end of the day, a 20-year-old kid. The manager's supposed to know what he has in his pool.
Don't you always say you want to know where you stand?
The manager needs to know how to get the best out of his players. If he thought this was going to get the best out of Giovanni Reyna, he was grossly mistaken.
Herc, Seb, I'd like to get your advice then on this one, seeing as though you are our Football America's.
Advice? We're going to that pair for advice.
What's going to happen with both of these characters then?
Cuidado,
Gio.
Hablamos de
and
los
Greg.
Ratings.
in the US setup, how does the future look for both of them after this?
Oof.
Well, so it's a you kind of said they won't trust Berhalter moving forward.
Right, but you are the one who said, and Craig's already alluded to it, and Stevie alluded to it, that he's out. He's gone. He knows this, and that's why it's coming out.
It feels like you would not say this if you didn't have at least 1 foot out the door.
I didn't think of it that way. And Stevie and Craig could maybe, you guys could answer this. He's got a very good possibility of coaching abroad.
Okay.
The Bundesliga and Eredivisie, he's going to be an attractive option. If you just saw the way he handled a national team that gets together every 3 months and for a tournament setting, what do you think the day-to-day with a footballer is going to be like?
Yeah, that's fair. What about Reyna? Where does this leave him with his teammates moving forward?
If he was forgiven and took it like a man, took it on the chin, then it should be
water under the bridge. Do you think he was forgiven? Do you think he was really forgiven? Because we have heard that it was multiple players that confronted him about it, and that it was, according to The Athletic, the word that they use from multiple sources, untenable.
Look, Stevie and Craig have played in multiple locker rooms. If a player is good enough to help you win, it doesn't matter what he's like off the field. You want him next to you, and you will forgive him if he is sincere in that apology. Players with less talent than Gio Reyna have acted worse and still been forgiven, and everything is good.
Okay. There it is, guys. We will come to you next time, Craig, for rundown advice, next time we need it here on Football America.
I will let you know how Christian Pulisic's toenails are doing, just in case you got to lead with it. Don't worry about it.
We love Football America. You can check it out at ESPN Plus. It is live from Qatar every night during the World Cup, and it's been brilliant throughout.
I thought those two would be home by now.
No,
how come they're two?
Jolly up now.
Still there.
By the way, I'll take a pain in the butt, teammate, if you're going to get me out. You know what I mean? I'll take it.
Yep.
I've played with lazy players before.
Will you take this topic in the A segment of Football Americas? I hope so.
What's up?
Lots more talk on the World Cup over on our YouTube page. If you haven't already subscribed, make sure to do that. Click in ESPN FC on YouTube and the content is uploaded daily. In fact, hourly, there's plenty of it over there.
Hourly? No.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. Now, the first semi-final showdown is coming up. It's between Argentina and Croatia. Argentina, favourites going into this one. And there's been a lot of headlines focused on the Albiceleste's celebrations after that penalty shootout win.
The what?
Over the Netherlands.
The Albiceleste, of course.
Albiceleste. Explain to me, what the hell is that?
Stuart, their nickname. Stuart Robson, Gemma Soler and Julien Laurent are with us. And I'd like to start, actually, by talking to Gemma, because we did see a very animated Messi afterwards in the mix zone.
Horrible.
Calling out Wout Weghorst. Gemma, you've been in many a mix zone where Lionel Messi's been, all of your time spent covering Barcelona. Have you ever seen him like that?
Really few times, Kay. I think he has that special dirty look that we haven't seen that much lately with Lionel Messi. I've seen that when he faced bitter rivals Real Madrid. I remember especially that 2017 when he showed the t-shirt with that late goal. I have seen that the first time he faced Pep Guardiola as a rival coach with Bayern Munich in that Champions League tie that he trashed Bayern only by himself. That Boateng will remember that iconic match. And I see him doing that again, that dirty look, that, I mean, if you are a rival, don't get Messi angry. I think he's got that competitive gen. He's more Argentinian than ever. I think his heart was somehow divided between Argentina and Barcelona, and now he's 100% Argentinian and becoming every time closer to Maradona, I think.
So when we saw that, a lot of passion in the Argentine side, and there's a lot of talk about how that can bring unity to a team, and it's great to see. Do you see it as a help or a hindrance? Can you be too fired up?
Well, it was almost a hindrance against Holland when they lost the plot. And they did. Paredes, not so much Messi on the field, but one or two others. Maybe more than one or two others. So I bet Wout Weghorst, when he was trudging around at Burnley, never thought he was going to get called out by by Lionel Messi a year or so later. But yeah, they got to harness that in the right way, and I don't think they did. When Scaloni made those substitutions against Holland, when the tide was turning a little bit, the pressure was on, the big guys were up front, they were lumping it forward. They lost it. At one point, they lost it. And, you know, when Paredes slammed the ball into the technical area just after the free kick, and everything was going off. So they have to harness that in the right way. Look, 4 years ago, Croatia hammered them at the World Cup, 3-0. In Russia, but there's only like I don't know, three or four players, certainly from the starters that are left in that Croatia team. But it's still a good side.
You all right with it, Stevie?
No, I think definitely it could affect them. At the start of this tournament, I thought the fact that it was Messi's last World Cup, trying to win it, to become the greatest, everybody comparing him to Pele and Maradona, I thought that was definitely going to help. But I agree with Craig that it did fall apart. And I think a lot of it was to do with it was getting too much. So what's it going to be in the semis? And even if they get to the final, you just think they could implode.
Yeah. And I think Croatia will have noted that.
Yeah.
You know,
they just do that, don't they?
They do, but they've got a lot of experience in that side, as well as some good younger players that have come through, particularly at the back. And they'll have noted that. And I mean, Modric and co are not noted for digging people out and winding people up, but when you see that kind of reaction, I think it's part of the armoury, is it not?
Do you think the pressure is getting to Argentina, Jules? Do you think that's what we saw in this game?
I'm not sure so much the pressure, because they were 2-0 up at some point when Paredes came on, and I think it was really Paredes coming on that kicked it all off. And he's got that edge in him. We saw it at PSG. I think he still has that in him, and sometimes you don't really understand why he goes on one like he did, kicking that ball in the Dutch bench, because that's really where he all kicked off. Before that, he was tense, and I was at the stadium, and you could feel the tension. It's normal. It's a quarterfinal of the World Cup. But Paredes kicking the ball into the Dutch bench, then that's where he all like bam exploded completely. And after that, there was just no way back. They went one after the other, and they kept going into duels and challenges. But maybe it's not a bad thing that Argentina have that edge again, because De Paul, Paredes, Otamendi, Lisandro, all of them have that kind of edge. And I guess maybe to win a World Cup, you need at times to be a bit nasty.
No, you need a decent ref. Now, we didn't see one in the England-France game. Loz in the Argentina-Holland game was prancing around. Like, there was only one camera at the game, and it was on him. You know what I mean? This needs... I know every big game needs strong refs, but this World Cup semi-final, you know, Croatia been there recently. Argentina is definitely, you'd imagine, Messi's last throw of the dice. They never even thought they would be at this stage after that Saudi Arabia game. So there's going to be a lot of pent-up energy, frustration, passion. I've no idea, as I sit here now, who is reffing it, but as long as it's somebody who can handle it better than the two guys that I mentioned, that's going to be a start.
Can I just be clear here? You know, I agree with everything you were saying, but when I'm talking about the pressure being too much, I'm not talking about... There's nothing wrong with having that savage streak where you want to kick people, you want to fight to win the World Cup. I'm talking about the fact that Messi could win the World Cup and everybody in Argentina, including the 10 players on the field, are with him. That's what may boil over. They might lose the composure because of that. Not because you don't want to fight or run around. You need to compose yourself in times like the last minute against the Dutch. Yes, it's a great free kick, but the fact is, the desire to win, the composure disappeared, which is why they gave the free kick away in the first place. If they can get over that, then they can win it.
So let's talk about the 10 players on the field plus Messi, Stuart. What do you think of those who say Argentina is just an ordinary team with Messi?
I would slightly agree with them. Yeah, obviously Messi's the outstanding player. But when you look at some of their defenders, Lisandro Martinez, I still don't think he's particularly quick. I don't think he's particularly good in the air. I've seen Otamendi play for Benfica a lot this season. He's their weakest player. He's the player that you can run down the side of. And they've got Romero, we know. We're just talking about aggression and going over the top. Romero's one of those sort of players. De Paul, I don't think's played particularly well for Atletico Madrid over his time. Acuna and Molina, the two fullbacks, are they decent? They played in the last game. They're not going to play in this one, I don't think. Alvarez is a good player. But I think they're all about Messi at the moment. And the other players just have to keep their composure, make sure they play with discipline and be disciplined in their tactical approach and their approach in terms of tackling.
Let's be honest, if you took... I mean, they're all good players and playing at a good level. Yeah, they're not ham and eggers. But let's be frank about it. Semi-final of a World Cup. If you took Lionel Messi out there and put Joe Bloggs in, you're not exactly running scared of that team, are you?
No.
Well, you're not. You know, that's not to say they won't go on and win it and be successful, because we see Morocco in the other semi-final and we can see what's possible. But if you take, and obviously we're not taking Lionel Messi out, but if you did, the supporting cast is not exactly gold star.
And of course, Gemma, every player wants to win the World Cup, but these players especially want to win it for Messi too.
Yes, because he has become the leader of that team. He has led them to be successful again with that Copa America that I think at some point it's not comparable to the World Cup, but take a little bit of pressure to this young group where Messi is the absolute leader. I agree that they haven't been able to convince us for 90 minutes in any game, but there is talent there. And I think Scaloni has been flexible enough to change his idea at the beginning to include Enzo Fernandez, El Araña, Julian Alvarez there in the forward line. And they are a very talented group, and I think that making Messi angry, and he's still angry, he will be angry tomorrow, is the worst thing you can do. And yes, okay, all the team surrounding him wants to do this as well for eventually seeing Messi be a world champion.
A Croatia force to be reckoned with, though, especially at this level right now. And the fact that if it does go into extra time, you'd say that it probably favoured them, given the fact that they've been able to weather the storm in countless extra times in World Cups of late.
I really don't know, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, that midfield of Brozovic, Kovacic and Modric has been outstanding. Vardiol has been superb alongside Lovren. Juranovic at fullback, Sosa, who came back in after an illness. They've been... And Livakovic in goal. They really are missing... I mean, the key ingredient for them is they've struggled a bit through the middle up front, and they've made some changes there. They don't have, obviously, a Mandzukic anymore, and they have shuffled it around a little bit. But yeah, I mean, when you can control the middle of the park... And I think they're stronger in the middle, Stevie, than Argentina.
Aye.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with everyone, particularly with the ball. I'm shocked every time they start a game. I'm shocked he's in the team. De Paul for Argentina. I mean, how many of the Argentinian midfield would get in that team? I don't think in the middle of the park. I don't think any of them would. In fact, the majority, if you were picking a side between the two of them, I would suggest there would be probably more Croatian players in it.
And yet everybody is picking Argentina
because of one guy. Because of the
Is it because of that one guy, Jules, that you've gone for Argentina?
Yeah, I think so. I've seen them play live now 4 times, I think, in this World Cup, and every time you think, okay, he can't do it again. It's not possible. Not at 35. Not when everybody knows that he still has magic in his feet, and he finds some way. A way of doing it and impacting the game, like we saw against the Dutch in that first goal, where the reverse no-look pass for Molina is just out of this world. So, of course, you have to go for Argentina just for Messi.
And if we do talk about Messi with Argentina, Stuart, we're often hearing just Luka Modric with Croatia, but it's hard not to talk about him, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, he plays a free role almost. He plays in front of the other two, Brozovic and Kovacic, who Craig was talking about. But I think their key player in terms of attacking sense, because they struggle in the centre forward position. There's no doubt about it, whether it's Kramaric or Petkovic playing up front. They struggle there. The player that can still cause problems when they go down the right-hand side is Perisic coming round the back. If they can get deep crosses into that far post, he's the main threat, I think, for Croatia. But Modric is the one that pulls the strings. And if the game is played at a slow tempo, that's what Croatia want. They did it against Brazil. They controlled the midfield. They kept the ball. They frustrated Brazil. And Brazil didn't play the right sort of game. Maybe Argentina will play at a higher tempo, be more intense with their closing down, and make it more difficult for the likes of Modric.
And then the other semi-final is France taking on Morocco. Many an eye on this one. The defending champions taking on the tournament darlings. The defending champions are favourites coming into this one. And just a reminder that ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. Gemma, we've been talking about Morocco's progress, and I wonder if it's a big surprise to you, given that you'll know many a player in this team from La Liga.
It was a big surprise to see the way they hold the opening game against Croatia, because we know the talent of these players, but some of the players are not enjoying especially a great season. Like in the City, he's hardly playing, not with Lopetegui, not with Sampaoli. So, yes, it's been kind of a surprise. Then when I saw them against Belgium, I was like, okay, this team really melts perfectly together. And what they have managed to do hasn't been no surprise for me. It would be a huge surprise to see them beating France. Yes, we know well Bono. He was the best goalkeeper last season in La Liga. And the funny thing, curious thing, it reflects our time, is that half of this squad were born in Europe. A lot of them were created in the Spanish academies, like Hakimi in Real Madrid or Munir Mohamedi as well. And actually, Spain tried Hakimi to play for them, and he didn't feel like home. He felt he suffered some episodes of racism, so that's why he decided to pick Morocco. And I think that's something that European nations can think about it, that we treat these people that's coming, so talented ones like this one. So the Atlas Lions, it has been a surprise at the beginning and not the rest of the tournament. And it's amazing the way that the player number 12, I think, is affecting them. I was at the Spain game. I haven't seen that, heard that booing in a Clásico against the rival. It was amazing, and it will be for sure against France, again, the local team, the Morocco.
Stuart, what have you made of Morocco in this World Cup?
When you talk about sitting deep and defending being really compact, stopping the opposition playing through you, defending for your lives, Morocco have done that superbly. You know, they had to play on the counter-attack in most of the games, but defensively, they've been so well organised. There's so many teams that when they drop that little bit deeper, they don't get the intensity when they close down. Morocco have done that. They've dropped deep, but then they've defended with intensity as soon as the opposition get in the top third of the field. And then they've played on the counter-attack. Their defending has been the best in the tournament so far. And that's why they are where they are, because in attacking sense, you know, they're not going to make that many chances here. She's obviously their key player down the right-hand side. But overall, it's their defensive qualities, their understanding, the tactics of how to stop the opposition have been brilliant.
We've seen some of the highlights, actually, Jules, of Achraf Hakimi and Kylian Mbappe and the friendship that the two of them have. It's been obviously put out there on social media. Comes as no surprise. That's a nice friendship to focus on when it comes to this game. But how do you see those two featuring in this game?
Yeah, it's a great narrative in this game, of course, because they will directly face each other as well. So you often have a friend or a very good friend who play against you. But to play directly against each other as a right back and as a kind of a left winger, if you want, would be even special. Even special, they spend a lot of time together. They've spent a lot of time here in Doha together. The families know each other. It goes way beyond football and way beyond just a normal friendship that you can have in a dressing room. So it would be very special. They just know each other so well, like by heart. I think Achraf would know exactly what Kylian is going to do with his step over. Kylian knows exactly the way Achraf likes to defend or not. I think it would be fascinating. And for Kylian to go from Kyle Walker in a very different matchup, of course, to then his best friend, it can't be easy on back-to-back games.
Yeah, you wonder if that's going to be the important...
Well, you can't be friends for 3 or 4 hours. You just can't be friends for 3 or 4 hours. If you want to be matey-matey, then you're probably going to get done. You've got to put it out of your mind. He's just another player. And if that 50-50 tackle's there, and you've got to smash him, you've got to smash him. And you can't be half-hearted about it, and you can't be thinking about it, and you can't be doubting yourself. Oh, I might hurt him. Oh, I might as my mate. No, there's no. It gets to this point in games, Stevie. No friends in these games.
No friends in football, Stevie.
Absolutely none.
Just ships passing in the night.
So keep your distance. All right.
Well,
I get it. It's a deep-rooted thing. Away from it and has been for years. I understand all that.
I've never seen anybody. You know, there's been plenty of players who have played against each other who are brothers, who are friends. I've never once that I can remember ever seen anything other than both parties. If the ball stuck in between the two of them, both of them smashing into each other. It doesn't happen.
Do you know, we'll have a beer afterwards. It's probably a glucose drink these days or something.
They don't. Probably.
But, you know, we'll talk about this after. We'll have a laugh about it. We'll see whoever comes out the victor. And we'll go then and we'll have a cold beer. But let's not be doing all this matey-matey thing during the game. Mm-hmm. There's way,
way too much on the line here.
I know you two are going to laugh at me when I put this to Jules now. When I say that France just squeezed past England, Jules, have Morocco seen some areas they'll be able to exploit from that game?
I don't know. I think the boys were sure was right earlier. They're going to play exactly the same way that they play against Spain and Portugal. I don't know if they can pull out another miracle this time. I think France have something that Spain and Portugal didn't really have or didn't do enough, because we saw when Nico Williams came on that he went on 1v1 with Mazraoui, and that's where Mazraoui struggled. And then there were crosses in the box, although there was nobody there. France will have Giroud in the box, and I think from what we've been told, the plan very much that they've been working on is for Dembélé to go 1v1 with Mazraoui, if Mazraoui is even fit to play a left back, and for Kylian, of course, to go 1v1 with Hakimi, and then to put them under pressure like that instead of just passing the ball from right to left. Because what this Morocco side does really well is that shuffling. You know, they're so good, they're so compact, they're so narrow, that if there's not enough pace in the way when you play your passes, if there's no 1v1 situation, or even 2v1 if your fullbacks go forward, then it's too comfortable for them to defend, and they're just too good at defending.
Everyone's gone for France when it comes to the predictions. I'm interested to know why you've gone for them, Stuart Robson.
Exactly what Jules was just saying. I think Didier Deschamps will get the tactics right, get the ball wide quickly, switch a play really quickly, and then you've got Olivier Giroud. I never thought I'd say this, but he's the most important player on the field. If they can get enough crosses into the box, Olivier Giroud, as he's shown over his career with France, will get on the end of something and score a goal, as he did against England. But they have to get other midfield players making runs into the box as well. Rabiot, in particular, who I thought was excellent in the game against England. So I think, yeah, France will win the game by a couple of goals to nil.
I don't know why you were embarrassed saying that they only squeezed by England.
You were actually kind about England. I was watching.
Who cares? The most important word was England passed. Yeah, well, you can use any word you like. Pass England is all that matters.
England played well, but unfortunately they're out. The French had the nous and the experience and blah, blah. But it's not going to happen. Can't happen a third game in a row, can it? Morocco, dream-like story, you know, clean sheets again. Now, France have got too much, I think.
Well, we only have to wait a couple of days to find
out. Oh, it could have been England.
Could have been. Would have been. It wasn't.
Should have been.
No, I won't say that. Gemma Salah, thank you so much for joining us. We're looking forward to hearing much more from Gemma, because La Liga will be returning before the year is out, and you can catch all of La Liga's games here on ESPN+. So make sure you are with us for that. Just a reminder, ESPN FC on ESPN+ is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. These are the games that you have to look forward to over the new year period. And we are going to focus now on England, because there's been a lot of talk about the future of Gareth Southgate. And it seems that opinion is a lot more divided after that game against France. Some have said that they definitely think he should be going after this tournament. Others have said, well, we've seen something a little more from him there. Stuart, I'm interested to know what you think about Gareth Southgate's future after seeing that game against France.
It doesn't really change my point of view with the game against France. I think that Gareth Southgate is a relatively limited coach. But in terms of man management and getting the best out of a lot of good players and making the players feel welcome, all that sort of stuff, which you have to do at international football, I'm not sure too many people can do it better than he does in terms of making sure the players enjoy their time with England. Because over the years, a lot of players have said they never really enjoyed playing for England. They now do enjoy playing for England. They've got some good players. And while I don't think he's a top-class coach, I wouldn't sack him at the moment or try. I would try and persuade him to stay on until the end of his contract, the European Championships.
Stuart, what would you have done different if you were the manager in that game, looking back at it?
I wouldn't have done a lot different. I mean, England had, particularly in the second half, they didn't play particularly well in the first half. I thought their movement down the right-hand side was good. Saka was obviously causing problems. There's not too much else he could have done. You know, would he bring on Grealish that bit early? I'm not a Grealish fan at the moment. I don't think he affected enough games for Man City over the course of the season. He had the best players on the field. I think that was the case. And he made the right substitutions at the right time. And that hasn't always been the case with Gareth Southgate. I blamed him for losing against Croatia. I blamed him for losing against Italy in the final of the European Championship. He had a poor Nations League. But over the course of this World Cup, they've done okay. And I can't see any reason why you'd sack him before the end of his contract, which is the European Championships.
There's two ways to look at it. I'm a bit 50-50 on it. Because, yeah, they played some good stuff and they've got some fantastic attacking players in particular. Thought Declan Rice was outstanding and will eventually, whenever that is, leave West Ham and go on and patrol a midfield of a really, really top club. But ultimately, they've had three pops at it, and that's ultimately three failures. And when you look at the avenue that they've had to get to where the World Cup semi-final, the European, the Euro final, and now they've met the big hurdle in France this time around. And you look at the teams they've beaten in the last 4 or 5 years, the Panamas, the Ecuadors, the Colombias, Iran, Wales, there's a list going on. It's not, there isn't any real elite level teams. Germany, they did beat in the Euros, but well, let's be honest, the Germans are going downhill at France clamour and continue to do so. So I think there's a little bit, I think, from certainly the English, reading between the lines from the English fans, not so much the English journalists, is that actually with the pathway we've had, it could, with these players, have been a little bit better. It could have been better. And I think that is an argument to be had.
Right.
Not that he deserved to be sacked.
But they'll say the first time you came up against a big, strong opposition, you didn't manage to get past them.
I think it's a 50-50 call at the moment. I think he's done well, but there has been an avenue for them to go all the way, particularly in the first two occasions. I'm okay with Gareth staying. I mean, this is good for us.
Southgate, wouldn't it? You know, if he's a manager of Real Madrid or Barcelona or Man City or whatever, and he's second, third and fifth...
Yeah, but if you were never there and now suddenly you are getting that far, that has to be taken...
Well, you're going the wrong way. You've got
this
a final.
Time on the
you've got a final,
market,
which means
right?
You're second. You lose a semi, which means you're third at least. And then this time you're, what, fifth?
If this is a club team, you're going the wrong way. When were they doing that before Gareth Southgate, though?
Sorry?
When were they doing that in recent years before Gareth Southgate come in? When were they going...
Oh, give him a 20-year contract,
then.
I tell you what,
let's do it another way. Let's do it another way. Jules, can you list us off the top of your head the French players that were missing?
Yeah, Benzema, Pogba, Kante, Kimpembe, and Nkunku, and Lucas Hernandez. So six starters potentially.
So there you have that. I think that is part of the argument that some in England are having. Some in the media are saying Gareth's done great, you know, and he's harnessed an atmosphere, and the media relations is good, and the results have been pretty okay. Yes, there's another argument to say this could have been a whole lot better when you think about who we've had, and we've met the world champions at the quarter-final stage, and they're just missing all those players that Jill said. Yeah. And we were, in England, were missing who?
No,
really? I mean, don't think anybody in particular. There's the argument.
All right. Jules, I'm interested to know the reaction in France to that game against England and getting past them. Obviously, they're happy to have that one out of the way. And can you tell us a little bit more about the reaction to Harry Kane taking the second penalty? Because I heard that there was some surprise in France that he did that.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, surprised, I'm not sure, but a debate for sure about whether it was right for him to take that second pen, considering he was against Hugo Lloris, who he obviously knows very well. And the French were just like... they were not saying that it was a criticism of Kane or of Southgate for Kane to take it. They were just saying, like, was that okay? Was that planned? Did they even discuss it? And I don't think it was ever discussed. It was Kane for penalties, whether he had one, two, three, four in the same game against a keeper that he knew, who knew him or not. It didn't matter so much. The reaction in France, and to be fair, I started it. I'm tired of his substitutions. I'm tired of his very, very poor in-game management, Southgate. And I agree with Stuart. Every single word Stuart said, I just don't think he's good enough. Why is Raheem Sterling even coming on in that game? How come Raheem Sterling is the first player that Gareth Southgate is thinking of when you 2-1 down against France with 10 minutes to go? When you've just spent 5 days in London, he's flew back from Doha to London, 7 hours, 3 hours time difference, went back the other way after 4 days to deal with something that was quite traumatic to him and his family. Another 7-hour flight, another 3 hours delayed time difference. And then you bring him on for Saka, who is your best player so far. That didn't make any sense. Like, it didn't make any sense not to capitalize on England being so dominant in that second half and waiting to be 2-1 down to make your first substitution. I just don't get it, and it's not the first time. And just for that reason, I just don't think he's good enough for a very, very talented squad.
Not only that, but Sterling hadn't really played well before going home. Then he had that in his mind. All the reasons Joe's mentioned, he flies back. Rashford, who was, you know, up until the Senegal game, we thought he was going to start because he'd been flying. You're looking at his pace in behind, his goal threat in behind. He should have been the first port of call. And to go back to the penalty, if Jordan Henderson or Phil Foden or anybody else had stepped up and taken that penalty and missed, Harry Kane would have been bludgeoned. Absolutely bludgeoned by all and sundry. So I really don't think he had any choice to stand up as the leader, as the main marksman, as the penalty taker, and take that responsibility.
He'd already scored. Have they forgotten? He's already scored.
Yeah, but then it's a whole new...
Yeah.
Well, what's the difference between the second one and the first one? Well, Harry Kane showed the first time round he could outfox the goalkeeper. So why wouldn't he be able to do it a second time?
Jules, understandably then, Gareth Southgate will not be your manager of the tournament so far, but we have asked you to put together your team of the tournament right now. Talk us through it.
Talk us through that picture.
Thank you for the photo, by the way. Yeah, I went... Yeah, ha, ha, ha. I knew you were going to say something. I went for Walid Regragui, of course, as the head coach, because it's an amazing story. He'd been in charge for two minutes, and he's taking this team to the semi-final for the first time in African football history. It's incredible. I've got Bounou in goal because, as Stuart said earlier, they are the best defence in this tournament. So Hakimi and Saïss are both there as well. Saïss, who've been playing almost a game and a half on one leg. I thought Vardiol at 20 years old had been outstanding for Croatia. And I like Borna Sosa a lot at left back. The midfield three is really tricky because there have been a lot of outstanding performances, really. But Declan Rice, Craig mentioned him earlier, I thought was great through the tournament. I love that new position for Griezmann, and we saw how well he played against England. And then Luka Modric, because it's Luka Modric. And then the front three, Messi and Kylian are obviously your first picks. And then I went for Saka because I liked what Saka did through this tournament against France, the penalty that he got, the goals that he scored against Senegal, for example. And he's still very young, but you see all the potential, and I think this competition will give him a lot of confidence.
Hold on, we can't go, but we have to mention that picture again. To me, he looks like an overage student who's just fallen in love with his teacher.
And
he's glaring at the teacher.
Like Macron.
Oh, wow. All
like,
right,
like
Robert,
Macron
what do you think
is...
Did you see that gaze in his eyes there, looking at the teacher?
Robert, what do you think of Jules' team?
It's a good team, and I would agree with most of those players. I think all those players that he mentioned have done well. There was a case maybe for Bellingham getting in, and I never thought that Griezmann, having seen him play for Atletico Madrid over the last year or so, that would be in the world's best team at the World Cup. But he has been excellent. He's been a different sort of player for France. And as he said, he's found that new position almost through an inside right position, making those forward runs, got a good understanding with Dembele. So I'd go along with most of those players that Jules mentioned.
Any additions to that?
I think I would switch Frenchman. I would have Giroud up front and take Griezmann out. I think that's the only change I would make.
Okay, anything?
Oh, I was looking up how many games he'd actually played. And on my phone, and I got caught. Now, my pronunciation here might not be perfect, but Onur, number 8 from Morocco.
Nedim Onur.
No. Jules, help me out.
Unai.
Unai.
Yeah.
Unai.
All right, I got it wrong.
Oh, you probably had a subs list as well in your head, Jules, right?
Unai.
Something you wanted to put in, but there just wasn't room for them.
Yeah, he was on there.
Right, let me go the full
Unai,
way.
Craig is right. What an outstanding performance.
Yeah.
Derek Ray would be really proud of you.
Well, what did I call him?
No, you're right, Unai.
Anua, and he plays for Angers.
I'm going the whole way.
I'm going the whole way. He plays for Angers.
All right. With that, we'll move on.
Somebody will phone in now.
On the Gavin Jules podcast. Yeah, Derek won't be happy with
somebody will not be happy.
Either.
They'll complain to my boss.
They're coming to us regularly throughout their time in Qatar. Make sure to check that out wherever you do get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You can see that Alexis Nunes, Shaka Hislop, has decided to also grace us with his presence.
Nice of Shaq to turn up.
Yep, we have to say goodbye to Stuart Robson. We forgot to do that. Jules is sticking around as well. These guys have been out enjoying the desert, Alexis.
Yeah, okay, we had to. You know, when in Rome, do as the Romans. Everybody here has been doing it. And finally, today was the day we needed to, because ever since Shaka touched down, all he's wanted to do is ride a camel. And Shaka and Jules, being the competitive fiend that he is, they actually went on the camels themselves. Shaka and Jules went together. And then your camels started attacking each other.
Shaka's camel was very aggressive. The camel can sense who's riding them.
Yep. Jules and his camel cutting across my path. My camel wasn't too pleased with that.
I was trying to stand up for the camel rides. I was trying to see how much they literally can weigh.
In the wrong place.
Oh, I did, Kay. I was really good at it. Kay, I was really good at camel riding.
I was definitely sat in the wrong place.
Not so much, Alexis.
I was trying to think of the camel, and I was trying to distribute my weight evenly so that I didn't harm him. You know me, animal rights always.
But I'm told, Shaka, that you got the hump because Jules was a bit faster than you on his.
No.
Yeah?
No, Jules started up in front.
Oof.
Look at this.
He's struggling.
I started going by him. And love, what's that?
Did you hear me cheering for Shaka in the background?
I had a beat.
This is where it gets dirty, though, Kay, because like I was telling you, look at... testosterone is a serious thing.
Well, I'm just glad he's keeping himself busy over there.
So technically, Jules...
Hey, Shaq, yeah, I don't know if you've noticed...
We've been working very hard.
That's right, Greg.
Shaq, I don't know if you've noticed, we've got a bit of a delay here, sorry. But there's a World Cup going on just over your shoulder, did you know that? World Cup. Soccer.
Leave me and my camel alone. Me and my camel are doing just fine, thank you very much.
What did you name your camel?
Creed.
He named his camel Creed because he was trying to bite Jules' camel, so he was a bit feisty.
Neil.
But Jules, you survived. I survived,
yeah, just about. I let people judge what kind of guy Shaka Hislop is just on that losing and then throwing me over. Almost I went to the sea. I was almost in Saudi Arabia. It was crazy, like such a bad loser.
Listen, I'm not going to make the joke about...
They're special.
I'm not going to make the joke about Gab turned up and the camel went, whoa, hold on a minute. No. Too much.
I don't know if Gab has ridden a camel yet.
Alexis, what were you up to while those boys were getting all aggressive and competitive?
She was on the camel.
Well, Kay, I actually took the sledge. I took the sledge down, as you can see. Look at that technique. Look at that form. I mean, just absolutely brilliant. I was the only one that didn't fall off of the sledge. But then coming back up, I'm just going to show the world now how I am the most unfit person ever, because I ran out of breath.
It took me
about 2 hours to get back up. I kind of just told them.
Come on, help me come.
I kind of just told them to go without me.
You had a set of camels again, Alexis, at the new dune.
Alexis is
See, look at Shaka, not the right form. Shaka, it's all in the abs.
It's all
How come we
it's
didn't a, get
well,
on this trip?
It wasn't really a day off, was it? We were working hard very work. Hard.
That was hard work. I'm warning you.
It was hard work.
Yeah,
we
hear it was hard
in.
Work, Shaka.
We got scared half to death going through the dunes.
Yeah, we hear it was hard work, Shaka, because, you know, Craig just mentioned there's a World Cup going on over your shoulder. Not that you would have noticed.
Standard.
This is my amazing camera work here.
What the hell's going on in this trip?
That is so mean.
This is the only time Jules has been quiet for the entire trip. So I was like, what's going on there behind me? And when I looked around, both of them catching flies.
The mouth opens. Not a good look. Not a good look there with the mouth open.
We can send you out to guitar if you like, Craig.
No, thanks. No. What people don't know is, you know that position Shaka was in there? That, like, just laying back. His car actually goes back to Boston. I'm not talking about all these, you know, these what do they call it, Uber now? That you, not Uber, but the other one where you don't, the computer packs the car for you and all that. He's ahead of the game. Autonomous. He's ahead of the game. He goes
right.
back to Boston in that position every day after the show. The car just goes. Marvellous.
Well, he's not getting any rest tonight because we're going to call him back for extra time. Must be Frenchie singing if Jules is happy.
Sorry,
like
our ESPN Argentina colleagues. Our ESPN Argentina colleagues have just decided they have a live band to play some of their chants, and I mean, it's impossible to not get involved. Yeah. Jules already has Argentina winning this World Cup.
No chance.
He's nervous.
Yeah, but he was celebrating along there. You've got to be careful, Jules. Listen, guys, we're going to let you guys get some rest. Thanks so much for being with us. Shaka's going to be back on Extra Time. You can always check out Extra Time over on our YouTube page.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's the championship schedule coming up. So tight is it right now that West Brom are just now 8 points off the top six with a game in hand, but they'd actually started the day in 22nd, just 1 point off safety. It really is tight in the championship. It's such a great league to watch. You can always catch it on ESPN+. That will do it for the latest.
That's the most worrying thing of today's show. That
and the fact I don't have my extra
sitting
time
there,
question.
Sitting there on an island, that flower, I have no idea what the hell it's for.
For festivities.
And that's the budget.
Anyway, we'll
what
see
festivities
you after this.
Is it
We're
today?
Going to answer your questions on extra time.
The 12th of December. What's festive?
All right. FC Extra Time is presented by Globant, and Craig Burley has been keeping himself very much in shape right now. He is fighting fit. I'm hoping he'll go get my questions for extra time for me.
Oh, so you're just flapping.
No, we'll just read them.
If
that's all we can spend on Christmas decorations, I'm not walking.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. Is that the festivities?
It's holiday decorations.
That's not a decoration.
The holidays are 12th of December.
And there's some nice ones below us as well. You just can't see because of the topic bar. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, what's the point of having the topic bar down there? We need to sort this. That needs to go.
That's a waste of time.
All right, we're going to wait for these questions to come up. Shaka Hislop is with us as well. He's going to be answering your questions and not falling asleep on the job, hopefully.
Do you want me to go and get them?
Yes, please.
We blew the budget on camels. There you go.
Yeah.
Go on, Craig. We will start with the first one while Craig brings the rest of them. Was it better having the World Cup in a small place geographically like Qatar, with all the games and fans in basically the same place, and the players don't have to travel long distances, or better in other World Cups with the games and fans far away from each other? I think Craig's done one, so I'll ask you that, Shekha. Is it nice to be able to bounce from stadium to stadium in this World Cup?
I think it's a whole lot nicer in a small country when you can stay centrally and travel to see whatever games you like, regardless of who you're supporting. And you know how it is in these World Cups. You're not quite sure what tickets you're going to get. Sometimes you want to go and see different countries or different countries play. And given how small Qatar is and the proximity of the stadiums to each other, you're able to do that. I have to say, I've thoroughly enjoyed my experience here, being able to go to different games, sometimes different games on the exact same day. I don't think we could have done that at any time before, and certainly won't be able to do that in 2026.
Yeah. All right, Shaq, we get it. We get it. Thoroughly enjoyed. Thoroughly enjoyed.
And on your off days, you could go ride camels. I'm just saying,
you could go ride camels, and everything is great. That's why I took so long over there. There can't be the amount of questions that are on there. There's three sheets.
I might end up repeating myself then.
Yep.
Second question for Shekha. I'm not falling for that. Second question for Shekha. How big a psychological edge would Lloris have had over Kane when he stepped up to take the penalties, given their playing history?
Listen, I always see. I've looked at all these penalties from the eye of the goalkeeper. And in the first penalty, Lloris goes low to his left. Kane goes high to Lloris's right. In the second penalty, and I keep saying this, it's all about the first step. I think Lloris gets the first step and times it perfectly well. And then he goes high right, exactly where Harry Kane went with his first. And I think Harry Kane kind of sees the move and tries to go down the middle as a result, but just overcooks it slightly. And so it becomes the way I see it, Lloris wins what was a psychological battle around that second penalty.
Should have had a psychology coach for the penalties, Craig.
Yeah. What was your strategy, Shaq? Just accept it was going in and move on?
I just stood in the back of the net and just waited. They're like, it's going in. We'll be all right.
Yeah, but right.
It's interesting. If you were to take it again, would you? What would you do? How would your mind work? If you're in the same game and you have to take another one?
I've taken three.
Right, okay, of course you have. So how did your mind work on each of those?
You don't want to know how my mind works. Trust me. And my mind was, I went the same way twice. All right, Shaq, that's enough. I went the same way first twice. You're confusing me now.
I know, I'm sorry.
I think you
the
can
first
say
two
that.
Penalties, I went the that. Same way across the goalkeeper. And my thinking was, he was going to go the other way than where I went the first time. But he went the same way. It just so happens I hit it hard enough and high enough into the corner. It's a game of bluff. And then the last one, I changed my mind a bit like maybe Harry Kane did. I was changing my mind as I was running up. Because I didn't know if he was going that way or... It's hard, man.
Well, that's Shaka, right? So, Bale always talk about... And I actually believe that whether it's Harry Kane or anybody else, if they put it where they want to put it and they hit it hard enough, the goalie's not saving it. Would you agree with that, Shaq?
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Stevie. I think if Harry Kane goes with the exact same penalty, even if Lloris anticipates that, even if he gets the timing just right and that's where he goes, Harry Kane hits them so well that I don't think Lloris is saving it regardless. He gets closer, but I don't think he's saving it.
If Harry Kane put out, I don't follow Harry Kane or any footballers, to be quite frank with you, they bore me to death. But I saw somebody retweeting when he put a message out about what it meant and he felt sorry and blah, blah, blah. And you've only got to click on the replies to see the morons out there. You know,
the dangerous game, the comments, the replies.
Well, I was
sometimes
just
very entertaining as well.
Well, I was intrigued because I just thought, well, how's this going to go? And I looked down a little bit, not far, because
it was, as it said, on the tin. But, you know, the idiots out there saying, look at the size of the goals, you've just got to hit the target, all this sort of stuff. People who have just no idea that you have a highly paid professional goalkeeper in there who's won the World Cup and who's trying to outfox you, basically, for want of a better term, and trying to get in your head. And honestly, you've just got to, I suppose, that's normal, isn't it? But, yeah. Hopefully he never read them. I'm sure he didn't.
No, I'm sure he didn't. Can failure in the World Cup motivate top players to win the Champions League this season, or will it affect them negatively?
No, it shouldn't make any difference. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Try harder? No. Proper players understand that your career goes up and down. There's the great highs and sometimes there's the great lows.
Hold on, do that again.
And so you accept that, and whatever cards you're dealt, you move on.
I thought
on.
It was more about an up.
Yeah, well, it depends who you're playing for, doesn't it? If you're playing for the Brazilians, it's a bit more like that, right? Right?
Yep. That's why I scribbled them out, because I end up reading it again.
Well, go on, read it again. It was such a good question. Because he'll do that again.
So who, no. Right?
To anyone, should Canada feel less devastated regarding their World Cup exit now, seeing that they had two World Cup semi-finalists and a strong Belgium team in their group?
Who is anyone?
Anyone.
Yeah.
Well, he's not here,
anyone
is he? Anyone's not here.
They should be pleased with the way they played for the two games. They were unlucky. They could have won the two games. They didn't. Sometimes that happens. But the way they played, absolutely, they should be happy.
Stevie, looking back at all your player and managerial honours over the years, which one award or achievement are you most proud of?
What's that?
No.
What's that one that caught all over here?
That one?
The shield.
The shield.
I didn't even know it's called.
Oh, I've no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You support a shield.
You need to get yourself on Herc and Seb, by the way.
It's Seb and Herc.
Well, Herc told me it was Herc and Seb.
But it's Seb and Herc. They're currently discussing Pulisic's ingrown toenail, I would imagine.
They get into the final of the shield,
and then they blew it for him.
Shield. I guess I would have to say that winning the FA Cup the year of Hillsborough would have to be up there. But the rest are just a smidgen below it. It's,
everyone's all brilliant.
Everyone's great. Fantastic.
See how she just... Why not?
Have to.
She just scribble it out.
Otherwise, it's just all writing.
Why don't you go for the straight one? They're like, Gunsville.
I could just do this with it.
Aye.
Shaka.
Sideways.
As a man who knows a few things about holidays, which of the four countries remaining in the World Cup would you like to visit and why?
Can it quite a belter?
Oh, I'd like to visit Morocco most. I know quite a few people who've been to Morocco and absolutely love it. And architecture, unique, food, exceptional. I'm a little bit of a foodie. You may or may not have guessed. So of the four, without question, it's Morocco. I've been to France, not been to Argentina or Croatia, but Morocco easily.
Architecture. Architecture.
Very cultured, Chaka is.
Thank you very much, Kay. That's exactly right.
No, when he was on that camel, he was on that camel. He was sitting. He was definitely in the back seat, wasn't he?
It was. He was.
He was in the wrong seat.
He was doing this.
He was on the back seat. If camels have seats.
On the back seat.
But on this one, for the purposes of this story, he's got a seat. And the camel turned to him. Did you see the camel turning and going? About time you had a holiday, big man. You like a holiday? Camel could talk.
Which of the four
nations? Nothing I can say to that.
Well,
nothing.
Croatia, I've been to Zagreb, but I've not been to the seaside resort in Croatia, Dubrovnik. It's supposed to be really nice.
So you'd like to go there?
Sorry?
We'd like to go
there. No, I'm getting there. I'm biding time to think about the other teams that are in it. Morocco, yeah, it's good for holiday destination. Who's the other team?
Argentina.
France.
Everybody's been to France. Everybody. I'd actually like to go to Argentina.
Good choice.
I've been to Brazil when the 2014 World Cup was on. That's a different story. Wasn't a pleasant stay.
I have to say. I'd love to go to Argentina. And just for one of the Argentinian steaks, they're supposed to be the best in the world. He's nodding his head, and he would have it well done.
I did as well. Absolutely, Argentina's the place to go.
Are you allowed back in the country?
Absolutely, yeah. 100%. Didn't want me to leave.
So would you go back to Argentina?
Paul and I went to Argentina for a week scouting. Came back with how many players?
Zero.
But we had a fantastic time. We went to a concert at the Bombonera.
Came back with no players.
We went to a great concert at... Oh, no, it wasn't the Bombonera. It was... what's the other big one?
So if you two went together, who spoke Spanish? Who were you planning to talk to?
No, we had a guide with us, didn't we?
Right.
We had a man, Horatio, took us everywhere, took us to all the restaurants, lovely well-done steak.
Did you go to any games?
Did you scout any players?
Oh, well, we didn't quite manage to get everything in. Including the games.
Including the mission.
Including the games, huh? No, Argentina was brilliant. All the dancing in the street. What do you call the...
The tango.
You're walking down the street and all these people doing the tango. It's fantastic.
Jim Smith did that, not in Argentina, sorry. The late Jim Smith. No, Jim went to... Jim went to Italy. No, it's about him coming back with no players. Jim went to Italy, years ago, 25 years ago, 20 plus. And they would wear for 2 or 3 days at least, and he hadn't got a player because he hadn't got the deals that he was trying to do over the line. And he turned to, I think it was Neil Sellett, and he said, "We've got to go back with somebody." He said, "Because the chairman will sack me if I don't go back with a player." So he ended up, somebody told him about Baiano. Do you remember Baiano? The little Italian guy. So he said, we'll take him and go back. He turned out to be a star for them. But he was like the last resort, and somebody went, "He's available." And Jim went, "Yeah, we'll take him." He said, "So we'll go back to the chairman and say, look what I've got."
So it was a more successful mission than Stevie's in Argentina.
It turned out that way. It was very successful. Successful. What are you talking about? It was brilliant.
Can you imagine him? Can you imagine him and Paul?
Seriously.
In Argentina.
Wonderful. That was magic. We had a great time.
What year was that, Stevie?
Oh, dear. Okay, 2007, maybe.
Right.
Aye.
Okay.
Great
For
time.
All.
Great time.
What was the architecture like? Was it lovely? Shaka's...
Oh, what can you see in the dark?
Very nice.
Or the inside of a pub.
A philosophical Stevie recently said, "Winning is the deodorant of a game because it covers all bad smells."
Right. Like it does, doesn't it? You can be absolutely wrong, but you end up winning by an own goal.
Mark Twain, Stevie Nicol.
There you go. Covers all bad smells.
Do you like that one, Shaka?
It's very Stevie-esque, is probably the best way to put it.
It's
There's a lot better
true.
Ways to phrase that, but Stevie being Stevie. Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Do the other ESPN FC panellists have similar words of wisdom for us? Do you have any similar words of wisdom, Shaka?
No, nobody's got similar words to Stevie. Let's just leave that right there. Thank goodness.
Any mottos you follow, Craig, or any words of wisdom?
Yeah. Deodorant is what? Deodorant is...
Winning is the deodorant of the game. Deodorant because deodorant it covers all bad smells.
Covers all bad...
No. I've got to tell you.
I've got one out of you, one out of you. The man that never made a mistake, never made anything.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I've got to tell you, I think you may be with me on this. You know when you walk into all these stadiums today and dressing rooms?
Yeah.
And they've got all these signs and all these things. Like that what, nonsense
what,
he came out with.
The man that never made a mistake. Never made it.
All that
it's
stuff.
Not the critic who counts.
Oh, yeah. It drives me insane.
You haven't got a little live, laugh, love?
Oh, God.
It's
not a lot of nonsense. If anybody looks at that and goes, "Oh, I'll need to remember that when I'm playing." What a lot of nonsense.
Right.
Well, it wasn't actually a sign, Stephen.
You know what I mean? All these new stadiums.
This is Anfield.
All these psychologists now.
You don't like that?
No, it's a lot of rubbish. Absolute nonsense.
But you like winning as the deodorant of a game because it covers all bad smells.
That's his. Yeah. That's his sort of Amazon documentary, Mikel Arteta team talk.
Exactly.
When Stevie goes in to the New England Revolution and goes, "Look at this spray.
Yeah.
This is going to cover."
Leslie.
It's going to mask your
rubbishness,
mediocrity.
Yeah.
Stevie, if you stand and face the sun, all your shadows fall behind.
I'll get sunburned.
That'll do for the latest.
Hold on, what if that deodorant's a roll-on?
Well, it's still deodorant, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a roll-on.
You just put it on a different way.
It doesn't work if it's a roll-on. No, no. It don't work if it's a roll-on.
Join us tomorrow.
You put it on a different way, that's all.